Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review Monday Night Raw, but also Friday Night SmackDown, NXT Super, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, they're joined by Sidgwick to review Monday Night Raw. A sort of weird show this, Sidge, because in terms of developments for Hell in a Cell, quite a lot actually happened, and I still left this show feeling like they're just spinning their wheels and not much happened last night.
I think the issue there, Wilborn, is that yes, they built a Hell in a Cell, but this Hell in a Cell card is all but identical to WrestleMania Backlash, which was so named because it was a sequel to WrestleMania, only without everything cool about it. Yes, some of the work was involved, was great, but whatever. I'm going to level with you, Wilborn. I'm in an absolutely foul mood. A foul mood for reasons not related to WWE Raw, but WWE Raw itself puts me in kind of a foul mood at the best of times because it is so bland, it is so nothing happening, it is so repetitive. Why am I watching this TV show? Like, why? What is the incentive for me to watch? Where is the entertainment value? Where is the hook to watch next week if it's just the same old crap? People have been saying this for, what, 20 years? Like, 20 years. And obviously, some things have changed. I've looked at the Wikipedia list of champions. I know that, objectively, things have changed because I can see evidence of things changing. So why does it feel like literally nothing changes on this goddamn television show?
Yeah, it's it does feel like this week in particular is a little moment of, like, because I said to Hamlet as well, gave WWE a lot of passes off the back of WrestleMania 38. I was like, that was so good, especially night one, obviously. It was so sensational that I'm going to forgive them being a bit WWE in the fallout from this. But yeah, there was moments during this show and I was like, almost Lashley again, is it? Really? That wasn't enough at the two premium live events and then a steel cage match last week.
Beaten decisively the first time. They didn't even give themselves a different finish, like a way out of the finish. Yes, there was character development, so there's an excuse to prolong it this time, but it's still the most black.
Wasn't a good match the first time.
No. And it's never going to be a good match because the Moss is in it.
but let's dive into it. Because there were elements, I will hopefully cheer you up, because there were elements on this show that I did enjoy.
Not really.
The chief of which was probably the opening segment, to be perfectly honest. The show opens, I should mention, with a video package of what happened on SmackDown with the unification of the tag team championships. And the Usos emerging as those unified champs with a little help from the tribal chief. And it's revealed that Riddle is going to team with the Street Profits tonight against the Usos and the other member of the Bloodline, sort of, Sami Zayn. So out comes Riddle. He gets a huge crowd reaction. And he's visibly quite emotional. And he cuts a promo talking about Randy. Says it's his best friend, his dude, his bro. He says the last couple of years have been hard for Orton, particularly the last few months. He revealed that Orton had a bad back and could barely walk through before the unification match. But he knew how much the match meant to Riddle and how much it meant to the fans. And so he went through with it, which I think was a little bit of a sly dig.
Well, let's talk about that, because there's so little else to talk about on this show in terms of the content and how it made anyone feel, because this crowd was mostly dead throughout. What's funny about this line is that it's been suggested to me on Twitter, and it's going around on Twitter and socials in general. Was this a subtle dig at Sasha Banks and Naomi? If you, you know, delve into the verbiage here, he didn't want to let down the fans. You can link that to Sasha Banks and Naomi, who have been framed in WWE propaganda as letting down the fans for that match that they only really announced the day of. It's not as if they walked out on this pay-per-view that people had bought or whatever. Come on, it's not as if WWE doesn't themselves change the main event like they'd done in the run-up to WrestleMania Backlash. They let down the fans by not doing the title unification match at WrestleMania Backlash, but that's by the by.
Didn't they also once, what was it for? Was it Survivor Series where they were like, Stone Cold's going to be in the main event, and then they went, oh, got run over, but we all knew he was never going to actually compete.
That is, Wilborn, a good point, and it's most infamous example of their absolutely rank hypocrisy that can absolutely piss off this company. Just done. Have been for several years at this point. The take is, was this a subtle dig at Sasha Banks and Naomi? And it's like, well, maybe, but it's not as if they've been using subtext throughout the smear campaign, because they've outright said in a, you know, hatchet job, oh, they've let you all down and they're completely unprofessional dickheads.
They literally did it as part of the entrances for Nikki A.S.H. and Alexa Bliss, where Corey Graves said, oh, let's not forget Sasha Banks and Naomi left last week and disappointed the whole universe.
Yeah, so I think maybe this was an additional pile-on to that which we've seen already, but yet again, they don't really deal in subtext at the best of times, let alone in a situation like this. I just think it was one more petty dig, but at the same time, it's not particularly sly when they've been anything but throughout the last, what, three episodes now of main roster programming.
The thing is, as well, I don't really want to detract from this fired up promo from Riddle, because I quite liked it. I thought this was a glimpse of, and it, you know, that is the plan, seemingly, according to reports going forward, that now Orton and Riddle will just target Roman Reigns. So they've just gone, why don't we just have the tag team champs face the champ in the men's division instead of the women's, because they clearly aren't going to go for it. But I did like the glimpses that I saw, because, you know, we all, you said yourself, if they fail bringing up Matt Riddle to the main roster, then they've got no bloody hope.
Yeah.
And they brought him up and they did a little bit of stuff with him, and he had a good start on SmackDown and what have you, and then he kind of got a bit lost in the shuffle. Then he formed this weird tag team with Randy Orton when he was just an annoying arsehole. And then he endeared himself to Orton, and arguably endeared himself to a lot of the fans as well through this. And I'm looking past RK-Bro, and I think it has been a successful project, because now I felt, kick Roman Reigns' ass eventually when you finally clash with him for what he did to you and to your partner, who's not here tonight, and Orton's no doubt going to fight on one of the stadium shows for the world title as well. Anyway, to finish it up, Riddle's promo, he said that they lost the match and he wanted to give the Usos credit, but he hated that they lost the way that they did. The Usos did what they had to do to win, and the way they went about it. He called Roman Reigns a tribal piece of trash, and said he was going to get his vengeance on the bloodline before his career was over. He said he loved and appreciated Orton. Doesn't know what the future holds for RK-Bro. Maybe they'll never, ever team again, but he knew Orton was at home watching. And so he led the crowd in a RK-Bro chant.
Right. I'm not sympathetic to Riddle, and it doesn't wash with me when he tries to play earnest babyface on a personal level, because I don't necessarily see the man as a babyface IRL, which separate the art from the artist stuff makes it difficult for me personally. However, in my capacity as a reviewer who tries to be objective, believe it or not, the crowd were very much into this.
Yeah.
The crowd were very much connected with Riddle. Riddle, over the past 6 months in particular, has evolved into that rarest things, a pretty surefire future WWE or Universal Champion at some point in the next 1 or 2 years. The crowd are really into him. He's a very rare WWE success story. It's easier for me. I don't like to do this, but, you know, time has this weird and sort of awful effect in terms of you forget things that you shouldn't, or whatever. It's easier for me to, and maybe I shouldn't be doing this, but it's easy for me to park certain things when you're watching him be this one-dimensional dickhead stoner who's got his stupid, pretending to be stupid, then again he is pretty stupid, act down pat. When he tries to really pull an emotional resonance out of me, I instantly bristle, but these fans aren't. So on an objective level, this really is working. And realistically, if they are going to push him as a solo world title contender, this is exponentially better and more productive and indeed more effective than him sort of flogging brunettes and brogert yes. and having his stupid business ideas and everyone backstage thinking he's a dumbass tit.
Exactly. So we run down the card. There is a countdown again to Cody for his match against The Miz. And we get a little pre-match promo before this six-man from the Usos saying that they accomplished what they said they would. They took out Orton. They took out RK-Bro. They had kids and grown men crying because they the twos. We the ones.
Oh my God.
Love that.
And now you do.
Riddle attacks the Usos during their entrance. Street Profits also have made their entrance, come down and get involved too. And the officials have to separate everyone as we go to a break. When we come back, the match starts. Sami Zayn is there wrestling in a Bloodline t-shirt. Before we go to another break, the Usos super kick Montez Ford out of the ring. And Ford tries to make this comeback. But the Usos take out his partners, so Ford decides, you know what, I'll knock Sami Zayn and Jimmy Uso off the apron and hit Jey Uso with an enziguri. Riddle gets the hot tag and just runs wild. Hit Jimmy with a knee strike, forearm suplexes, sentons, double sentons to Jimmy and Sami Zayn. Angelo Dawkins gets involved. He takes out the Usos, and then he sets them up on the outside for Ford to do one of his mad dives out to them. Riddle gets his hands on Zayn, who's still in the ring and still the legal man. Hits him with an Orton-esque draping DDT. And the Usos try to get involved and change their minds and decide they're just going to walk out and leave their boy behind, leave the match. So Riddle takes a moment, hits Zayn with the RKO. 1, 2, 3. And Riddle and the Street Profits do Orton's pose after the match. Good stuff, this.
I guess. I'm sorry. I'm just going to be in a pissy mood. I'm sorry. This match was aggressively fine in that it's pretty high-level work in a match that just seeks to undo that which happened the previous week. Yes, you can't get relentless heat on baby faces all the time. Maybe I've complained about that in the past and I'm a hypocrite, but it does really feel like, right, okay, that match that happened on Friday, you know, the baby face, he's fine. He's fine, guys. He's absolutely fine. He's got a win back. Maybe that's just absolute ingrained cynicism at this point. Why are the Street Profits all of a sudden extremely willing to just tag with Riddle and be his mate and not even sort of mention or hint towards the fact that they've been like trying to beat them up and trying to turn heel and now they're suddenly best mates again? This sort of bollocks just does not wash with me. You know why? Because I'm not 4 years old.
Yeah, they have really screwed over Ford and Dawkins because, yeah, like you say, in and amongst the, well, it was the WrestleMania time period, it felt like they may be added into some sort of match or whatever it may be.
They've been healing on Riddle and Orton for several weeks before this. Have I made this up?
No, I mean, like, in recent weeks, they seem to have gone babyface again. But certainly around WrestleMania, it did feel like the turn was either happening for our very eyes, at the very least coming. And then they just went, no, we haven't got any babyface tag teams on Raw, basically.
Yeah, but there were some weeks after WrestleMania where the Street Profits were,
oh, yeah,
when they were sort of having arguments with RK-Bro over who should unify the titles with the Usos. And now they're just made to them.
They lost the tag title match with RK-Bro and went, well, I guess that's that. Except defeat. I mean, fair play to them. At least someone does.
Yeah, someone's got to.
Right, then it was time for Bobby Lashley's Almighty Challenge.
What was this?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I came into this, you and I, suggesting that there may be some sort of mad Bobby Lashley obstacle course like we saw him do against Sami Zayn many, many moons ago. But in reality, it was just Bobby Lashley cutting a promo and asking for a match, basically, is what happened. He came out. He was in a very chipper mood after beating Omos in a cage.
Smiling a lot, wasn't he?
Yeah, in a cage match. They already announced that Lashley and Omos were going to fight again at Hell in a Cell. Why? But he said, I know it's not over. Please let it be. And he said, I'm not surprised that we're fighting again at Hell in a Cell. And I thought, you and me both. And he invites Omos and MVP to come out, and they do. And MVP moans about last week's result and says, oh, bloody faulty equipment and all that. And Lashley said, you know what? I got a challenge for you. This is my almighty challenge. I want to face you tonight. And the winner picks the stipulation for Hell in a Cell. And MVP's like, you want to face Omos again? He's like, no, I want to face you, MVP. And MVP says, I'm the one who made you. And Lashley says, no, I'm the one who made you. And I'm going to put you down with a hurt lock. And MVP thinks, well, maybe I can get an edge by, we got the numbers advantage, sneak attacking Lashley before the match. What actually happened is almost an MVP walked down to the ring, got on opposite sides of the ring, and MVP just got chased off by Lashley and knocked off the apron. And that was that.
Cool. Right, it's just it's just content. It's just absolute content, isn't it? It's just content. It's just things to do.
Yeah, basically.
Things to do again.
I thought, I was rather disappointed in this, to be perfectly honest. I was just like, oh, cool, so it's just a match. Like, bigging up the almighty challenge. And then it's just like, do you want to have a match?
It wasn't even his challenge. Didn't he say also, I had a feeling we'd have to do this again or something
yes,
like that?
Yes, I knew this wasn't over.
So wasn't it decided for him that this is already going on in Hell in a Cell? Yeah. By who? Adam Pearce?
It was already announced before he came out, I think, that it was a match.
Cool, so why is there a challenge? Much less an ultimate challenge. It's not a challenge. You're not challenging someone to a match because the match is already happening. You don't have to challenge.
I think the challenge was, can I have a match to set up the match at Hell in a Cell?
What?
I know. I'm as confused as you are, mate. Good news, they announced another show in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, for God's sake.
For the 5th of November, I think it is. And then backstage, Postman Pierce. Here is how thin on the ground. No offense to Dana Brooke. I like Dana Brooke. But here's how thin on the ground they are for women's wrestlers right now, with no Sasha Banks and Naomi on Raw. Dana Brooke went to Postman Pierce wearing the 24/7 championship and said, I want a world title shot. And I thought, what?
Everyone talks. Everyone is insistent that as bad as the booking is, it's still, the women's division still has parity with the men's, right? Because of the allotment of time. Doesn't matter that the booking's terrible because it's terrible for everyone, but isn't it good? Isn't it so much better than AEW? Yes, it is. Because AEW deserve pellets for this.
Yeah, it's a low bar, yeah.
It's a low bar. Would Akira Tozawa ever, in this context, be allowed to go up to Adam Pearce and challenge Roman Reigns? Would this ever happen?
You'd just get laughed out of the room.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They would never even put pen to paper on this idea. This idea wouldn't even come to their heads because they're men.
Yeah. Well, like, I look around and I mean, they probably had just on the script, just woman asks for a title shot. And then Becky Lynch is like, actually, I want a title shot, or I, you know, got screwed over last week. And then they look around and they're like, right, well, Alexa's with Nikki. So that can't happen. Dude, Ab's involved in that as well. Liv and Rhea over there. Tamina. And then like they looked across and then it's like I said, it's like on SmackDown where we were like, who's next for Ronda Rousey? And we were like, it's Xia Li or no one.
Yeah.
It's just preposterous. Anyway, in comes, speaking of preposterous, in comes Becky Lynch wearing a preposterous flouncy top thing.
Is it the pirate shirt from Seinfeld?
Possibly, quite possibly. And
you know, now that you mention this, I've got something to say on this.
Go on.
Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins, right? It is my understanding that they have like a personal, professional stylist, okay? They have their own stylist.
Yes.
Hence why they wear, and you know, it's meant to accentuate their acts. I don't know what these acts actually are. Seth Rollins, I believe to someone, described his character as, imagine if the Joker was a narcissist. The Joker, baby. Was a narcissist undergoing a midlife crisis. And big time Bex is meant to be, the success has gone to her head. She's now sort of become a grotesque caricature of a megastar. And she makes herself, through her attire and her dress, look like that dickhead who you think everything's got in your head and you look like a tit, Conor McGregor sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I get it to a degree, right? How much money are they spending? Where, like, Seth Rollins has got a new bespoke custom suit that he wears for beatdowns every single week. I don't think he's ever wore the same one twice.
No.
You know, it's, in a way, it's kind of admirable character work because they are proving that they've got more money than sense. They both completely lost their minds. How this is good professional wrestling storytelling, I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
How much money do they spend looking like this? Surely there's a cheaper way of looking like a tit.
Yeah.
There's not that much money in wrestling. And I know in, like, you know, the stem cell treatment era and the others competition, so suddenly, Edge, your neck is fine era, that, you know, careers last way longer than they ever have. Look at the general average age of the main roster main eventers compared to what it was in like 1980 in the 1980s, for example. At the same time, it's surely a waste of money. Anyway, back to Becky Lynch's boring triple threat bollocks.
Yes, Pierce just went, yeah, fair enough. I'll have a rematch tonight then. You versus Asuka, main event, and if you win, or if you lose, you're out of, you know, you're not, you know, it's Asuka versus Bianca Belair, one-on-one at Hell in a Cell. But if you win, it's a triple threat.
Why would you need to explain the rules? How many storylines have we seen over the years where the rules of making a triple threat match are just obvious? You know the drill, except you know what? The idiot Goldfish fans don't, so I'm going to have to communicate this to you in a way that no one would ever talk to another normal human being, that this is the way it's going to be. It's so rubbish.
If I was an idiot, you could make an argument that... Becky Lynch's past...
Just a hypothetical scenario.
...is coming back to haunt her, because if you remember, she had that match with Charlotte Flair before WrestleMania 35, and if she won, it got made into a triple threat rather than her just replacing Charlotte Flair in a match that Charlotte Flair didn't deserve to be in. Anyway, that's no relevance to this, because Asuka beat her, and there you go. Yeah. Anyway, main event was set for the night.
When you said main event there...
Oh, no, don't
Chris, get, I
don't
know, get I know, yourself. I know, I know, I know. I just got excited for the first time on this wretched day.
Imagine that. You think you've reached the top of the mountain. I'm sad to tell you, there's a massive valley coming up now, because what you're actually stood of is not the top of the mountain, but the top of the mountain of omnipotence. Because the Judgment Day came out to talk.
Skip.
Well, do you want to skip this or skip the match?
No, I'll skip the match greatly.
Okay, well, don't worry. You know, I'm not going to make you sit through the entire bollocks, because I've
already done it.
These have rapidly gone the way of the House of Black, and most importantly of all, whenever Bray Wyatt used to talk, where I'd go, vaguely the point they're trying to make is, and they said words like sheeple. So there you go. He told people to join them. He said,
join me.
I wasn't chosen to be a tough guy like Cena. And I thought, it's 2022, mate. What are you talking about? I'm a miracle of my own hard work. Calls them sheeple. Your bosses, you do what they get paid 10 times more, and you got Cheetos on your fingers. You know, just the most lazy writing possible. Anyone who joins them will headbutt and smash through that glass ceiling like I did many years ago. And then he said, who's the next member going to be?
He's on the floor now, but go on.
Who's the next member going to be? Tommaso Ciampa? And I went, who? Who's that? That's not a person I've heard of. You know, there's Theory, no Austin Theory, and there's Ciampa. No, Tommaso Ciampa.
Who's that?
Who's that? Corey Graves. And I audibly went, no, like that. Alexa Bliss, and I thought, well, anything's an improvement.
Yep.
Drew McIntyre.
You didn't see that one coming, did you? It's like, no, because they're presumably trying to push him.
Yeah. Liv Morgan, Finn Balor, or AJ Styles. And he told Styles that if he joined them, his kids could refer to him as Uncle Edge. And he thought that was like a real zinger, I thought. Like, the only pause, you know, when they go like, like, it's going to be like, oh, boo! People were just like, what? And then we got the match.
You thought I was your uncle? I never was.
Is that like when you're younger and your mum's like, oh, this is Auntie Sharon, and it's just a woman who she's met down at shops?
Yeah.
You thought I was your auntie? I'm just a friend from work. Anyway, then we got Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest versus Liv Morgan and AJ Styles.
Skip!
Yes!
Skip, please!
I just want to do...
Skip means skip.
I know, but I've got to do a quick cliff notes here, because... Rhea Ripley, okay, you know, a giant in NXT, unstoppable force, to finish this match required it to be helped by Edge about three times. He put a leg on the ropes after she got hit with a code breaker. He helped interfere in the match and distract the referee. And then he held onto her trousers, whatever they are, to stop her getting hit by the Oblivion. And then she cradled Liv Morgan for the win.
I just love this, because this company is so good at actively burying people, but they might even be better at, like, casually, sort of, unwittingly burying people. We saw it not too long ago where, like, who got pinned, like, five times? It was a Ciampa when Miz was the referee. And it's like, Ciampa's five times a loser, because they did the visual pin gimmick to sell the Miz has something against Mustafa Ali gimmick. So it was all that. And then this time, The implication was that Rhea Ripley is so useless that she needs four times the help when she's much larger than Liv Morgan, much more decorated, much more pushed than Liv Morgan, but it's just to tell...
And Czech's notes beat her when they split, when they had the big blow-off, no?
Quite frankly, I think the audience is tired of having their intelligence insulted. I think this idea of good guys versus bad guys is antiquated, and we're going to proceed to push the creative envelope, borrowing from such niches as South Park and... King of the Hill. It's Goodbye versus Bad Guys to the worst possible level at this point. Oh, she's bad. We know this because she needs to cheat four times, even though she wouldn't have to in any other context because she's much bigger and more successful. And I hate everything. I hate everything. Only idiots can like this.
Skip me, skip.
Skip me, skip.
Enough of all that. It's now time for this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's short, it's crap, it's wrestling related. The five-star review. Nailed it! And this week's five-star review is brought to you by John the Gin from Norway. Should I do an accent? No, and I'll be good.
Go on.
I don't know what a Norway accent sound like. It'd just be Swedish chef, which I think would be rather offensive. And you know me, I don't want to cause any offense when I do an accent. So John the Gin. John the Gin writes, excellent podcast, I assume. My hearing still hasn't come back after Wilborn's last reference to his favourite tag team. Oh, one more time. Go on.
Who is it?
The Iconics! The wrestling world is a darker place without them in it. Headset users, turn the volume down before he clarifies. Sorry about that, John. His boundless energy paired with the Dadleys' logical minds, wealth of knowledge, and perfect level of cynicism generally makes for a fine listen, even if it's sometimes physically painful. I think that's more on me than you, to be honest.
Possibly. I've got a very monotonous voice. I'm surprised I've come as far as I have in the podcast arena.
You've done a fantastic job, mate. How about reviewing Kai and Tai's issues with Val Venus as yet another counter to the blind nostalgia for a certain era. Now.
Thank you. I'm glad we're going on this thing because there's some darkness within all this, you know.
Yes. Well, we've done Choppy Choppy Your Pee Pee before. So I was going to, he said, alternatively, keep this one for a time you need ammo for my five-star review. Please review whatever segment the Dadleys decided to skip. Sorry, not sorry. And I was going to do that to you, but not today. And on looking, I thought I'll just Google Val Venus and see what comes up.
Oh dear!
Do you know what I thought we've never actually spoken about?
How much of a cock he is?
Well, no. His introductory vignettes
is getting noshed by Jenna Jameson.
Exactly. So I thought I'd present that to you. And guess what? Guess what the comment section was? A fucking gold mine. Of course.
Great. Can I just say that if in the past we've not treated how low-key dark the Kai and Tai Choppy Choppy Pee-Pee segment is. Let's do that very incidentally since it's been mentioned. Yeah. The woman who played Ms. Yamaguchi's son was underage.
Really?
Yes. She's 17 years old. 17 years old. In addition, John Wayne Bobbitt was framed in WWE canon is this guy, some crazy chick, chopped off his cock, and then the cock came back on, and now...
Now he's in the pornos.
Now he's in the pornos. He was actually a monster.
Yeah, not a good guy. Yeah. Anyway, so Val Venus, picture the scene. Val Venus emerges from behind a bush with some trees flanking the...
Just a backstory in the back, Val Venus gimmick, just in case anyone's not too familiar with it. It just blew my mind because 1997, they were sort of doing like sort of race bait angles and like shoot season. And this is real, actually, because Brett and Sean seem to really hate each other. And there's more blood in the mix. Hell in a Cell got debuted. Like, the blood red aesthetic, as I always like to call it, just shifted away visually from this sort of like family friendly vibe. And even then, 1998 was so wild.
It was insane. So
unbelievably wild. So I'm just watching Raw and I'm thinking, oh, it's really good that, you know, characters are a bit more realistic and, you know, Mr. McMahon's a bit like my teacher in Austin's a Hero, and he did feel this.
Yeah, he did feel this.
Like, the crazed set pieces, this is really cool. And, you know, I'm 13 years old, and sometimes some titties, and it's, you know, everyone went through the same thing, even though you're not allowed to say it anymore. And then, porn star.
Yeah.
It's like, this is, should I be watching this? Yes.
Yeah. I can't remember how old I would have been when I first started watching WWF.
Younger than me.
Yeah, probably like 11 or 12. And I wonder why it caught my... Like, it's mad when I talk to people. It's lovely to chat to people. But whenever I talk to people, right, and they go like, I really got into it watching that feud between John Cena and Randy Orton. And I'm like, I really got into it because of all the stuff that Sid just mentioned with the cat and the tits and the blood and just people getting twatted over the head with a chair. And like, it was a great comment in the comment section. I'm not jumping ahead here because I didn't write it down. But someone said about Kevin Nash complaining about when he jumped to WCW because they were there like, hey, we're here, we're WCW. And there's big spike, obviously. And then they've got standards and practices. And over on WWF, they're like, what if the guy just gets his cock out?
his cock sucks.
And he said, like, on the other channel, they've got not only that, but just like, here's Jenna Jameson. It's like, yeah, I can't really compete with that, to be honest, guys. Like, they're both doing the wrestling, but that one's got Jenna Jameson. So, anyway, hello, ladies. That's what Bill Valvina says. He rises up out of the bush. Wonder what he's doing down there. Maybe a spot of light gardening, perhaps.
What was the fact that he's rising up meant to convey?
Also,
it's cat, because it's got blood in it.
Once again, just to reiterate a point that you made 5 minutes ago, that the audience are fucking idiots.
Oh, right? Yeah.
You can't just have a topless guy emerging from behind a bush and then eventually reveal, Jenna Jameson's down there. The entire time he's cutting this promo, there's this. Just the whole, like a little bed underneath him.
She's got a clit in her throat or something.
I don't know. I've no idea what's going on. Anyway. Hello, ladies. It's a really sinister laugh.
Oh, my God.
Welcome. We've got a little game for you. Love a game now. I'm trying to put games in every podcast.
All games.
Welcome to the set of my latest video. Video. What year is it? Entitled. What, do you want to guess?
Well, I remember this vividly because he's wearing like a helmet and it's more, welcome to my latest video, Saving Ryan's Privates.
That's good. It's not this
one. Is it
one.
Not?
This is the other one, right? You're right. He does do that in another one. Yeah.
Because, you know, they were a little bit too dry, so they needed to get sucked.
This one is Val Venus. What? Oh, by the way, he removes his purple helmet as he says this. Of course he does.
Val Venus.
He sucks this. He's rubbish.
So it's along the same lines with a war?
Yeah, it's war related, but it's rubbish. I would not be surprised if you don't get this.
Give us a minute.
Yeah.
So there's a... I'm just trying to think of famous war films. Give us a minute. This is fun. So there's the Deer Hunter. So there's a pun you could do there. Apocalypse Now. You can't really do many puns there.
You just got to be lazy at this point.
Plapoon.
That's really good. Far better than this. Val Venus, Soldier of Love. Rubbish. I want like Full Metal Pussy or something like that.
Full Metal Jacket. Full Metal Jacket cock. Let's see more of these.
Full Metal, take off your pants.
There's
I like Plapoon.
Plapoon.
The guy in the, on the
Beaver hunter instead of the deer hunter. Well, it's like war films.
The Cockalypse now.
Is Gone with the Wind war?
I don't know. I've never actually seen Gone with the Wind.
Nah.
Gone with my
God. Gone with your minge.
Cockablanca. No, that's not even a war film.
I don't even know if it's a war film.
Shag it again, Sam.
Oh, Jesus Christ. What is another war film?
I'm going to Google. I'll find some good ones for us. War films. Operation Mincemeat.
Operation Mincemeat.
What else we got? Hacksaw Minge. I'm putting classic war films.
Classic in caps. Classic. All caps.
Oh, there we go.
The Thin Pink Line, huh? It's talking about your slit. 1917 inches. It's a guy with a freakish cock.
The Hurt Cocker. Yeah, you get the idea. You get the idea, basically.
Jaw, head, get it? Porked on the 4th of July.
Oh, dear.
That's probably.
I think we'll do for now. We'll do for now.
We'll do another one next week. Next week we'll do it.
Next week, yeah, we'll do a series on the Valvinas video. Yeah, Soldier of Love, rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely terrible. That's Vince Russo for you.
Okay. Anyway, let me introduce you to my co-star. I'm sure you will all know the luscious Jenna Jameson.
Why is everyone into him already? How you doing, Jenna?
And she's been down there.
Down where?
And she rises up, and it is classy, Jenna.
How do you know?
Comment section. He says, and ladies, when Val Venus finally crosses enemy lines and enters the World Wrestling Federation, he does a groan there. One look at my silencer, and he looks at his cat, and you'll all be left speechless. Jenna's actually got a line here. Do you remember it? She's insinuating, if you want to have a guess, she wants to get back to what they were doing prior to him cutting this promo.
It's some like, can you go again?
Something like that. She says,
she's not Tiffany Stratton.
She's going to be Tiffany Stratton. Come on, Val. I want to go back down in the hole. And then on the screen it just says, Val Venus is coming.
So she wants to go, maybe she's, it's disgusting. Well, is her box or is it his asshole?
I have absolutely no idea.
Or her asshole. Or her mouth.
So many holes.
Don't forget the cervical hole.
So we go to the comment section.
Jesus Christ.
Do not remember to use myself, the Daddy Woods, or anyone at What Culture Wrestling. Scotty Ward, 2 months ago, just checking up. This video's been online for 9 years. Just to make sure. Yes, this aired on TV, and yes, this was the best era of wrestling.
Well, of course it was. Of course it was.
Wayne Early writes, Val could hold a dozen donuts. Val could hold a dozen donuts with no hands.
He's talking about a 12-inch erect cat.
But people are arguing about that in the comments. Apparently that was might not have been the case.
Well. On the shoot interview circuit, one, I think, bad if I get this wrong, but I'm pretty certain it was Missy Hyatt. He was like, No, just a gimmick. She was disappointed.
Do you ever have something where you're like, sorry. Here's a perfect one for me. There was like me... And I think Miller and maybe even Phil had this, we talked about realizing years too late about Paul Bearer,
yes.
An Undertaker.
Oh, you're talking about this in the office.
Yeah. Like, I crossed that finish line so late. It was outrageous. Wild Gab writes, I don't remember this. I never actually got that Val was a porn star. What? What do you think he was doing there?
Oh my God, I honestly thought you were going to say, Venus rhymes with penis, but it's also a bit like the planet, but that's how they get away with it. Didn't know he's a porn star. He's getting sucked off by Jenna Jameson, goddammit.
Or he hasn't seen these vignettes. Even if he hasn't. What? No, he just must have come straight out of the shower. I don't know. Must have been last minute booking, man.
Has he got a goddamn cock in his trunks?
Yeah.
He's got a cock in his trunks.
He cuts a promo every time saying, I'm going to shag every single one of you. Unbelievable. Joe from...
I'm on the set of my latest porno flick. He says adult films and stuff. Like, they never actually say porn, but again...
it's not subtle. It's not like, 10 hidden meanings behind WWE gimmicks. Val Venus was actually a porn star. You may not realise this. Jesus Christ.
I have cheered up, you know.
Yeah, I thought this would do it. Joe from Tom's River writes, this is all about the reply, really, not the comment. According to Bruce Pritchard, McMahon had no idea who Jenna Jameson was and didn't find her very attractive. Jenna Jameson in, like, 1998. T417 sums up my mood with this exactly. But he thought Sable was hot. Da f**k. Oh, God.
Jesus Christ.
Another one of our favourite things here. You know when people are like, I've got the inside story here, and you're like, no, you haven't. Or you've just written something that you hope happened and then said, this is what actually happened. Dorito Dude, what an appropriate name. Word is that this is fake, but they actually did do it later on. Well, I'm here, so you might as well.
I mean, there's a dark undercurrent to that kind of take, isn't it? Like, oh, of course you would, she's a porn star.
Yeah.
No. Terrible attitudes.
Bob, we've gone into the... We've crossed over now, by the way.
We've crossed over now?
Yeah, we've got 4 more comments.
Oh, my God.
Which definitely do not reflect the views of myself, the Daddy Wars.
One of these is getting edited out, guaranteed.
Bob just writes... This isn't the one that's getting edited out, but he's just a bit like... What? Why are you... You just click another tab and there's a whole world out there, Bob. Oh, she's at her prettiest when she's bearing her midriff, wearing jeans and smiling. On this thing, she's got bullets covering her tits. And he's like, yeah, I prefer her in jeans and a top. Thanks very much.
Oh, this is going to get worse before it gets better, I feel.
Fitness Brother Aid, 1 month ago, right? Why don't I have a girlfriend like Jenna Jameson? Probably because you're on the internet.
Watching old Attitude Era friggin' videos.
I don't think the chads that you're jealous of are like, good point, yeah, mate. I'll tell you what, here's the secret. I'll tell you right now. Siphon Toasty. Not the real name, I assume, and I can probably guess why after this comment. First of all, look how long the comment is.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
She was my first love when I was...
First love, come on.
She was my first love when I was 13 and at boarding school. Yeah, heads up, yeah. After I saw her for the first time, for some reason I started getting through 2 boxes of tissues a week and my right arm had this muscle that started bulging out my arm by my elbow.
Is he talking about wanking his
cack? I think so. She will always be number one for me and she is still beautiful to this day.
Ryan Sutton's burner.
I asked my girlfriend to go up to her at Whole Foods and tell her this. And finally, Jeremy Fox. This could be the comment that we could have, to be honest. Right, once again, don't know if I've used myself, Dad Boys, and What Culture Wrestling. Once again, massive thank you to John the Gin from Norway for our lovely review.
Lovely. Well, the review was lovely. Yes. The review, not so much.
Jeremy Fox writes... I'd scrub you for more than an hour and a half.
Oh, my God.
What? What are you talking about? I'd scrub you for more than an hour and a half. There's no context.
Okay. I think that's like the 50th minute. You'd be a little bit like, oh, okay, I've watched my porn star now. Can I? No, 40 more minutes of this.
We had an agreement. Come on. So, after the match, AJ Styles went after Edge. Sorry, we returned to Monday Night Raw now. And they battered him and Ripley powerbombed Morgan. I have a question. Where the hell was Finn Balor during all this? I thought they were a team. Or is this the theme of Bullet Club? When someone's getting beaten up, you do not go and help them. That's the rule one of Bullet Club. It happened with Liv Morgan. This time it's AJ and Liv. Finn's like, rules are rules.
Well, I'm pretty much sure I've seen the 2019 G1 climax. I know that is bollocks. I call bollocks.
Yes. Miz is backstage getting chatted to. Oh, hang on. Sorry, my notes have gone a bit awry. Oh, there it is. Kevin Patrick! He's sick of Cody Rhodes, just like Seth Rollins is. Says you can't trust a man with a neck tattoo. He might have a point there, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally, like, you're like, heels have to make valid points so that they believe are true. You cannot trust a man with a neck tattoo. No lies detected.
Yeah.
Miz said Cody Rhodes couldn't beat him 6 years ago, and now his ego's so out of control, he's got more fireworks than the 4th of July. He called himself, Miz did, the Kim Kardashian of WWE. He plugged that there's a new series of Miz and Mrs. is coming, and he said, people always want to know what I'm doing, and told Patrick to go away. So he just had a rant, basically.
Yeah.
Then it was time for regular weekly segment, you remember this, The King's Court with Jerry Lawler. What? Where's this come from?
It's, you know, it was a thing in the
past. I know
it
was a thing, but why this week, all of a sudden? You know what? Guys, you know what I think it's time for? It's time to get Veer Mahan talking on the King's Court.
I know.
Ridiculous. So Lawler asks Mahan for the secret to his success. Mahan just stares grumpily at him. And he says, all right, why did you... Can you tell me why you targeted the Mysterios? And again, Mahan's just getting more riled up and just staring a hole through Jerry Lawler. And then Lawler says, oh, you're getting a bit angry. Is this because of what the Dominics did to you last week? And
I went, I went,
who's the Dominics? Who are we talking about? A new team? Apparently not. Anyway, Lawler, he's got jokes. He got some jokes. He says, Rey Mysterio reportedly said to Jerry Lawler, Veer Mahan is so hairy that when he walks his dog, people pet him.
Don't pop. Because your lip's going, you're going
to
pop.
I'm popping it, trying to pop you.
Yeah, I'm not popping.
Okay, no pops around here. And Dominic told
him... Jerry Lawler, so there's obviously pops.
Jerry Lawler, sorry. And Dominic told him that Mahan was so hairy that Bigfoot took a picture of him. No pops detected. No. Veer Mahan grabbed the mic. He said, Rey Mysterio is a legend, but he's too concerned with this boy. And that made him weak, so he had to take both of them out. And he said, what's that I smell on you, Lawler? Do I smell fear? And Lawler says, no, it's probably my cheap cologne.
It's just my cheap cologne, JR.
Wanker.
Veer threatens to kill him, and out come the Mysterios to make the save, and they kick him a few times, and he falls out of the ring. Thoughts?
Zero. I have zero thoughts on any of this.
This is going to be forgotten by next week, isn't it?
Well, potentially.
Like, what was the point of this? Was the point, like, in kayfabe, is the point, we need to normalise this Veer guy?
I don't know. All I know is that it looked a bit like they didn't know what they were doing in terms of the brawl, who was meant to go outside and when. It was just super confusing.
Just kick, 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 kick. All right, okay, I'll not get back in the ring now.
Am I going to fly outside or what?
It's a mess.
It was a total mess.
And that was even before the attack. It was just a bit... so stilted, and like Veer's clearly not that confident on the mic.
That's a bad TV show.
Yeah, fair. In summary, Alexa Bliss is backstage. She's been asked about what happened with Sonya Deville, and she said, it's a bit of a crap time for her recently. Maybe she should go to therapy since that helped her so much. Don't take the piss out of therapy.
Yeah,
it's a legitimately useful thing to quite a lot of people. But anyway, she talks about facing her old partner, Nikki A.S.H., and what a microcosm this is. I'm looking forward to facing my old partner, Nikki A.S.H. This is where WWE thinks they can mock their own crap writing and get away with it. Because she was like, yeah, I'm looking forward to facing Nikki. You know, we used to be a team, and now I stand here talking to a doll, and she's dressed up like a superhero. Sounds weird when I say it. Ha 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 ha. No, you've just ruined two characters.
Yeah.
You can't just say, huh. It's like... I almost allow it sometimes in movies where they go like, if it's like a cop, like a scary movie or something, and they go, this was crap in the last movie, wasn't it? I'll allow that because it was meant to be funny. But you wouldn't have like, you know, a sequel to like a classic. Like Avatar's not going to be like, there was a bit of a plot hole in the last one. Thankfully, we fixed that. And this was the point where Corey Graves went, don't forget, by the way, that we hate Sasha Banks and Naomi.
You're only meant to hang a lampshade on bad writing when it's like a, you know you've messed up, you know that your audience hated what happened, and realistically you're trying to just acknowledge, build trust back within the audience, and then move on. You're not meant to bury what's currently going on, and then not changing it.
I was going to say, I'd almost allow it if there was like this big change. We reported on the news that every single writer or every single producer or whatever it may be has been sacked, and a whole new team has come in, and they go, "Look at all this crap." But it's like breaking up with your missus and then being like trying to get back with her by going, "Well, at least I'm not as bad as the last guy." No, you're the same guy,
yeah,
and you're still with her. So it's ridiculous. Anyway, in terms of the match, it was a pretty straightforward squash. Nikki A.S.H. got a tiny bit of offense in, got too cocky, as she always does. This is the story, because you're so fucking stupid, we have to do it 5 weeks before you understand it. Running blockbuster from Alexa Bliss. They go up top. Nikki gets sent back down. Twisted Bliss, 1, 2, 3.
Because she was too busy playing to the audience.
Yeah.
This is even funnier and even worse than it actually appeared on the surface. They have said, right, and if they change this, it'll be so funny because you can't change the main event, right? They have said that they are going to run a tournament to decide the new holders. They said this on SmackDown,
yeah,
correct?
They're vacant. The women's tag titles are vacant. And yes, there will be a tournament to determine who wins them.
We've established that on the main roster, there are how many tag teams?
Two at best.
One and a half?
Yeah, like that's a good point. These aren't a team yet.
Yeah, Natalya and Shayna Baszler, or... maybe because they pretty much are going to team together. Juju Ebb and Nikki A.S.H., right? So there are two teams, right? There are two tag teams on the main roster. No tag teams from NXT 2.0 were like built on this show as, guys, watch out. These guys are coming and they're going to be a big deal, right? And The pin one member of the one and a half tag teams ahead of the tournament to crown new tag team champions.
It's astonishing, isn't it? Could have just beaten Sonya Deville again. But no, they just pinned Nikki A.S.H. Kevin Patrick interviews Seth Rollins. He says the fans used to sing my song and now all they cheer is Cody, Cody, and they encourage people to do Cody because they're seals. He said it makes him physically ill to hear that name. He said, I can't believe there's a Cody countdown clock. Where's my countdown clock? And then he gets this sinister look on his face and says, what happens when the clock strikes zero? And I genuinely, audibly said this morning, you interfere in the Cody versus Miz match.
Yeah.
Let's see what happened. Cody entered, gave his weight belt to a young fan. There was a video package and a quick interview with Asuka where she said Becky Lynch is a big-time baby. But then we got Cody Rhodes versus The Miz. Cody Rhodes dominated, in control. Power slam, Cody cut a figure four. Miz gets to the ropes. Rhodes goes up top. And Seth Rollins runs out and interferes. Who could have seen that coming, eh?
Literally everyone. Cody is officially normalized in the WWE system. Gives me no pleasure to say that whatsoever. But when you are working absolutely terrible matches with The Miz, and it's probably The Miz's fault.
Got lost in this, didn't they?
Yeah, The Miz got lost in this greatly. Because if you look at everything Cody's done in the ring, he's been absolutely great. And now he's doing TV rematches to build to the third pay-per-view match with Seth Rollins, the...
9 minutes it went as well.
9 minutes with no finish. It's absolutely everything that everyone said was going to happen eventually once the novelty wore off. We are deep into Cody's getting boring territory now. And it's not a slight on Cody. It very rarely is a slight on any actual talent in this system. It's just what the system does to talent. This match was genuinely, like, staggeringly self-own. How on earth is it this bad, bad? And then you get people go, well, you know, you say, oh, Miz is pretty rubbish at this, isn't he? Like, you know, he's a good mascot, good promo for the weird style that they like to do, but he's not very good in the ring. And people go, oh, yeah, we had that great match with Seth Rollins and that one with The Miz. Do you know this guy's wrestled thousands of matches? Like, probably thousands at this point, and you can name two or three that were really good. That doesn't make him... good. If anything, you're proving the rule that he is bad.
There's another reason why they put him with Logan Paul, and that's because no one would be looking at The Miz
when
he's wrestling. They'll be like, can't wait till Logan Paul gets in, see what that guy does.
My God, they do a bow and arrow spot here where Miz treats a bow and arrow submission hold like he's going backwards down a slide like a toddler, where he's saying, don't do that, you'll hurt yourself, and the other kids will copy you, and the parents are going to say, it's my kid who's the problem. They do a sunset flip, which is more of a sunset break your own neck.
Yeah, Corey had to be like, he's trying to break out some new moves.
Yeah. My God, this was absolutely staggeringly atrocious.
Yeah, bad. Bad stuff here.
And I think people were wondering, where did it all go wrong for the Miz? I would counter that with them. Did it ever go right? But genuinely, this is a kind of a relatively new phenomenon in modern professional wrestling, because people age funny anyway. Like, have you seen those old, like, BuzzFeed articles where it's like, this guy was 22 in 1976, and he looks like he's, you know, 50.
Yeah. Because watch any old episode of Bullseye.
Yeah, like, everyone looks like they are ancient, and they're, like, 20. So people do age differently in terms of their facial expressions, but, like, The Miz doesn't look too dissimilar to what he did 6, 7, 8 years ago, but he's still bumping, and he's still getting more and more thrashed. He's had a really serious injury last year, in fairness to him. But wrestlers will... The new thing is that wrestlers are going to be thrashed before you even realize it, because people age differently and they look much younger than they have in previous generations, and The Miz is at that point now. But also, never that good.
Yes. That's low-key my favorite thing, by the way, in, like, female teen films, where it's like, have you seen Brad, the new kid at school? And it's like, they're meant to be, like, 16, like, 28, and I'm like, sorry, how have you not realized this?
Yeah.
Everyone in the school has to be about 25.
I like this film for my sins, even though it's, like, just cheese. But, you know, we all like a bit of just stupid escapism. I am a fan of the film Never Been Kissed.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like Never Been Kissed. I love a bloody rom-com.
All right, an article or something, isn't she?
Yeah, so she's a journo or a magazine writer who's never actually been kissed. And the premise of the film is that she infiltrates a high school...
Which is not aged well.
Yeah, it's not aged well at all, now that I come to think of it. But she infiltrates a high school to try and get kissed. It's like, go to college, love.
Just at least.
And I know there's a bit of
night school. I mean...
I know there's like... It stems because that's when you should get your first kiss. That's why it works.
I get it.
But, you know, if you're like 35, you should get your first kiss at, like, I don't know, a pub or a restaurant or like on a nice romantic walk. See, anyway... But still,
I finally got my first kiss. Where'd you get it? School. What?
Yeah. So I was gonna say, oh my God, the premise of the story is flawed, because Hollywood exclusively hires like actors in their late 20s to play like high school students. So it's not as if Drew Barrymore is like significantly more older looking than the high school students. But that's not the fatal premise. The premise is that she's a nonce.
Yeah, I love it in like
Jesus Christ.
Twilight when they're like, yeah, I've got to get back to class. And I was like, what class are you going to? I know some of you are like undead vampires or something and just don't age. But even though you look about 26, what are you doing? And then on 21 Jump Street, they're like, you guys look really old.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that makes sense. There we go. Love 21 Jump Street, man.
I haven't seen it. I have seen the original TV show on which it was based.
Watch 21 and 22 Jump Street. It's one of the... I love it. I think
Jump down on Jump Street. Did they repurpose the old theme for the film or not?
I think so. There's a lot of callbacks to it. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that I watched the first time and went... Huh? And then they went... Someone like made a thing of like, this is referencing all the old... Because I didn't ever watch Jump Street back in the day.
I've got this weird thing where I'm a 90s kid, but I should have been an 80s kid.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, watch it. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant couple of films, that. Anyway, what are we talking about? Oh, yeah, Raw. Rollins and The Miz beat up Cody Rhodes, chuck him into the steel steps. He starts selling his knee, and he's over the table, and then Rollins snatches his weight belt from that kid that he gave it to earlier and slaps him over the back with it and storms out. Cody gets himself to his feet. He's a good guy and a fans chant for him, and he gives his weight belt back to the kid.
I quite like that little detail. Yeah. That was nice.
Yeah, I like this bit next because it was Ezekiel.
Yeah.
Ezekiel gets a pass right now, mainly because of
his
position.
From me and you and Hamflet exclusively, because his matches die a goddamn death in these arenas.
Yeah, I maybe don't notice that so much because Kevin Owens is just yelling on commentary all the time. I'll swear at one point, he was trying to distract Ezekiel by just yelling Elias and see if he'd turn around. In the match itself, though, yeah, it's back and forth stuff between Ezekiel and Chad Gable. You can't really have a bad match with Chad Gable. Otis trips Ezekiel as he hits the ropes at one point. That's allowed Gable to take control and attack his leg. But Ezekiel gets his feet up on a moonsault attempt, hits him with a stinger splash. Gable distracts the referee so Otis can take out Ezekiel. But the ref turns around and sort of figures out what's been going on, gets rid of Otis from ringside, and once again, just all credit to Kevin Owens. He kicks at Otis out. Gable's furious. Gable's arguing with the ref. Gable's arguing. Ezekiel's still just getting up from whatever's happened to him. And Kevin Owens tries to sneak into the ring to attack Ezekiel whilst the ref and Chad are distracted. And the ref turns around, and it's the most hand in the cookie jar court moment. He's just like, he just freezes like, the referee's senses are based on movement. If I don't move, and the referee's like, you're out of here as well. And of course, when Gable goes back to Ezekiel, he gets rolled up for the 1-2-3, and Ezekiel bails out through the crowd before they can get their hands on him. So Owens challenges him to a match at Hell in a Cell, because they haven't got many on there.
Yeah, I feel a little bit sad that for whatever reason, the crowd just aren't really into this. Maybe it's because Ezekiel isn't much better than his brother
at
wrestling, and like, he just doesn't really have. And then the bell rang, because I don't think he's bad at all. He's just very limited and basic, and the crowd's just on into this character or the wrestler or whatever. It's a bit sad because they genuinely seem to be having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's infectious for me, but it's just sad that the crowd aren't really into it, because Otis, his selling of being thingied out when he was like shaking the ropes and like, that was great. As you perfectly put it there, the cookie jar moment with Kevin Owens is like, if I just don't move, maybe this will just, I'll feel like invisible. It's really good stuff. It's just not working, sadly. Yeah.
Hopefully that'll do something at the...
Yeah, I hope it penny drops. This is genuinely actually really good for once.
Cody Rhodes gets caught up with as he's leaving the trainer's room, and he says, I'm dinged up, but I can put weight on my leg, which is good news for me, but bad news for you, Seth Rollins. It's dawning on Rollins. He says that he's about to go 0-3 against him. And if Rollins wants to finish the job at Hell in a Cell, Rhodes is going to be waiting for him. Good little impassioned promo. Then we got Bobby Lashley versus MVP. For my sins, I liked a bit of this, of MVP. Just like, because MVP can wrestle still. He probably could do loads of indie dates if he wanted to. But obviously, in WWE's eyes, he's a manager. He's just schlub. And yeah, he hasn't got a chance against Bobby.
He can't go anymore.
Exactly. So he kept stalling. He kept, winding Lashley up by going to do stuff and then rolling out of the ring. And then at one point, he rolls back in the ring and feigns an injury brilliantly. Like, oh, my knee's gone. And the referee checks and almost just decks Bobby Lashley on the outside, which was quite good, I thought. Gets him back in the ring. MVP hits him with a running boot, starts berating him, but Lashley fires up, hits him with a flatliner, sends him into the ring post, and starts beating up around the ringside, sends him back into the ring. He's an idiot, Bobby Lashley. Sends him back into the ring, almost goes to attack Lashley, but doesn't touch him. Lashley gets rid of Omos, sends him over the timekeeper's table, timekeeper's area, basically. But in the midst of all this, the ref has counted out Bobby Lashley. So we have a count out loss for Bobby Lashley. That means MVP gets to pick the stipulation for Hell in a Cell. And then Bobby Lashley puts him in the Hurt Lock anyway.
Oh, wrong one. People getting counted out when they haven't been like badly hurt and they're desperately trying to get there is my least favorite thing. Like, how do you forget the rules? Like, absolutely, how do you forget the rules?
Why would you chuck your opponent back in if you weren't going to immediately follow them in if you can hear the referee counting?
Can you imagine, right, in football, that you get tackled, which is kind of a similar analogy here. I don't know why I'm talking about football analogies. People who do this are daft, right? But if you get tackled and you run the length of the pitch, right, you don't run and pick it up, because that's against the rules. Why would you ever do that? I'm gonna get counted out here. All right, there's 3 minutes left of this game, right? Okay, you need a goal, otherwise you're getting relegated. Cool. I'm just gonna pass it along the back four. Don't forget the rules, god damn it. I can't take any of these people seriously. They're morons.
No. And then the fact that they teased a count out in the main event probably didn't help matters either.
They're loving count outs at the minute. getting boring already, frankly. I thought they did very well with Sami Zayn and Shinsuke Nakamura. Not quite well. This company doesn't do anything very well. And now they're just they're in love with countouts at the minute. It's the new thing.
Well, we're at the main event.
Asuka. Let me finish this goddamn thing. Yeah.
Asuka versus Becky Lynch. They work really well together, shock horror. Early on, they hit each other with clothesline at the same time. Dueling chants, but Asuka comes back and just reminds me why I love Asuka. German suplex, running hip attack, strikes, sliding knee, all good stuff. That gets her a two count. Lynch fights back, though. She tries to pin Asuka with her feet on the ropes. Referee doesn't see it, but Asuka still kicks out. She hits a code breaker for a two count. Gets a superplex off the rope, off the turnbuckle for another two count. But as she goes for a running hip attack, Lynch dodges it and puts a disarmor on her whilst they're all wrapped up in the ropes. Asuka has to fight back with strikes. And she knocks Becky Lynch out of the ring with a running hip attack. Bianca Belair is watching this from ringside, sat on a chair just as she did last week, I believe. Asuka hits a knee strike on Becky Lynch and she collapses into Bianca Belair's lap, who obviously doesn't want to get involved. Actually made a bit of logical sense because you thought, like, oh, why don't you just shove her off? And then you're like, oh, well, if you're Bianca Belair, that would arguably be a DQ because you've laid your hands on someone and that would automatically make a triple threat and you'd, you know, less chance of retaining your title, blah, blah, blah. So she just sat, Becky Lynch, collapsed on Bianca Belair's lap. And Asuka goes to kick her and kicks the head off Bianca Belair. Lynch ducks it, nails Bianca Belair in the head. Lynch attacks Asuka on the outside, dives in to try and get the count out win. Asuka just makes it back in. But as she rolls in, she gets caught in a pinning combination by Becky Lynch. One, two, three. Becky Lynch steals it, wins it, makes it a triple threat. At Hell in a Cell. Big changes.
Yeah. When WWE does something good, more often than not, they do something so bland and bad and repetitive for the preceding 2.5 hours that I just have lost all ability to get involved. Watching it, I didn't think it was as good as last week's match.
No.
Watching it, I was like, right, well, I've seen this last week. I'm already in a mood because this show sucks and it's not quite as good. There were still moments where I'm like, that was nice, but I still don't really give a toss.
On to Hell in a Cell we go.
Yeah, follow me at Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at What Culture WWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from. For daily wrestling podcasts, myself and Sidge will be back later on to look ahead to NXT 2.0. And don't forget, you can still leave us a 5-star review suggestion, just like John the Gin from Norway did. Thank you once again for that, John. By subscribing to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review suggesting something short, crap, and wrestling-related for us to review, instead of a segment on Bloody Monday Night Raw. This has been the Raw Review, though. My thanks to Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.